¡Vamos, amigos!
¡Vamos, amigos! ¡Vamos, amigos, boys!
Been trying to save my voice all day, guys. It's your boy, Duke. Episode 38 of the Talking Soccer Podcast. We got a ton to talk about today. I try to keep these things around 30 minutes long, but I'm guessing we're going long today because between Jose Mourinho, Pochettino, the World Cup issue that just popped up, EPL this weekend, we're going to be here for a while. So buckle up and get ready. But like I said, I've been saving my voice, man, all day. I haven't had anything, you know, really that could hurt my voice from food-wise, drink-wise. I went to go get some tea. Asked my wife, hey, wife, where's the tea? She says, what do you mean? I said, where's the tea? My throat's killing me. I got the podcast I got to do tonight. He said, that expired in 2016. I threw it away. And what did I say? Who cares? It's freaking tea, man. I knew it was expired. I still wanted it. What can go bad in tea? What can go bad in tea? I don't know. So instead, I'm drinking Emergency. It's raspberry, and it's gross. I hate it. But anyways, I'm here for you boys. I've been excited to get this going because everything's breaking. Monday, the World Cup thing comes out. Tuesday, Pochettino's gone. There's rumors of Mourinho. Wednesday, today, I'm recording this Wednesday evening. As always, Mourinho's confirmed. A lot to get to today. But before we get to that, as always, I am your host, Duke. You can follow me on Twitter at DukeDFS. I do have my DFS content over at EliteFantasy.com, all my betting information over at EliteSportsBetting.com. And for those of you who aren't over there yet, make sure you're getting over there because we got some exciting new content coming out here shortly that I can't really give away today. But you may see something next week that we're all pretty excited about. But as always, all the guys are killing it. If you want to bet on NFL, NBA, college basketball, college football, golf, MMA, soccer, obviously, all that's going on over at EliteSportsBetting.com. So check that out. But like I said, we got a lot to get to today. And I want to start with Jose Mourinho and Tottenham Hotspur. Jose to Spurs, all the rage today. And before we get into the implications of what this means for Tottenham, I just want to go to his introductory press conference today because, as always, it's entertaining, right? If Jose is nothing else, if not an entertainer when it comes to the press conference, and he's a hell of a lot more funny when he's winning, and when he's not, he's a protagonist. He muddies the waters. He spins it. He's a constant spin zone artist. Talking about the past. And today he mentioned the past and specifically his record playing youth players. As always, it's prone to do, it's very obvious. Jose Mourinho does not like playing young players. He takes a very firm stance against this, and his record speaks for itself. Or so he says. He said today he did not play as much youth as he would have liked at former clubs because they did not have the proper academy talent or coaching to allow him to bring more players forward. Bang my head against the wall, man. Just look at his former clubs, just in recent memory, just in the Premier League. Let's look at Manchester United, his last stop. Well, they currently have the longest streak in the world of consecutive games in a row, which is what consecutive means, with at least one academy player in the matchday squad. This isn't a streak that dates back a couple weeks or a couple years. This is decades. As in, like, back to October 30th, 1937, Manchester United has had an academy player in its matchday squad. Not enough talent, not enough structure to bring more players forward. Jose. Come on, bud. Just at United, there's Marcus Rashford, Scott McTominay, Axel Tuanzebe, Jesse Lingard, not to mention Heath Chong, Joel Pereira, Fosu Mensah, Andres Pereira, Angel Gomes, James Gardner, and perhaps the player who could be the best of this entire group, Mason Greenwood, who've all played or been in matchday squads this year. That's insane. And that's just his last stop. Not even mentioning Chelsea, the previous stop where he's won his trophies. Well, forget about the time he sold Kevin De Bruyne. You heard of him? Mo Salah, heard of him? Romelu Lukaku. Ignore that bit where he sold some of the best young players in the world because he wanted to play, quote-unquote, experience instead. Don't take into account that he needed, quote-unquote, experience because he is and was a meticulous micromanaging every single decision his team made in an effort to appear like a tactical genius. Ignore the fact that he took a team that could have been a Ferrari and turned it into a literal bus. Ignore that. Not enough talent in the academy, right? Just look at the current Chelsea setup today. Tomori, Mason Mount's been a revelation. Reece James looked like a monster in the back. Tammy Abraham scoring goals. Hudson-Odoi, wanted by everyone throughout Europe. Nearly left because he wasn't getting game time with Mourinho and other managers. And then Ruben Loftus-Cheek, who was a key part of last year's setup, suffered a bad injury. When he's healthy, he'll be back in the team. Not enough talent in the academies, and that's why he didn't bring players forward. Bullshit. This is typical Jose. Hindsight is 20/20, unless you're Jose Mourinho, at which point you point to specific statistics, very carefully selected to prove your point, and then be ready for a lot of muddy waters. Because Jose Mourinho is, was, and always will be a checkbook manager. He just is. He spent $1.6 billion on transfers in his career, nearly 300 more than the next big spender. And Spurs are a laughingstock because they don't spend money. So how in God's name is this marriage going to work? Daniel Levy's alienated every single sporting director on the planet because he's such a penny pitcher and a bitch to deal with. Now, it does look like they're bringing in Campos to be the sporting director, which I think is a great move. He's very good. He's very known for finding young, emerging talent just at the right moment before they come into their prime or they hit that next spurt, that next peak in their development, and then flip them for a profit. For those who don't know, this is the guy who was at Monaco overseeing their billion-dollar windfall from selling players. You think of players like Bernardo Silva, Kylian Mbappe. Well, hell, Chelsea was even hoodwinked buying Bakayoko from him, from that same team. But Fabinho was in that squad. Most recently, he's been at Lille, overseeing their transformation from an middle of the table, bottom of the table, League One team in France, the Pub League, to now a Champions League spot. And flipping that talent for profit. You think of someone like Nicola Pepe over at Arsenal. He's one of those players that he found, developed, and sold. That structure, that makes sense for Tottenham. You know what? They're a club, doesn't spend money. They're a selling club. That's not Jose Mourinho. Mourinho spends and spends and spends. And when the players he wants don't work out, he asks for more money and sells them or just keeps them because the wage package is too big. They paid too much for him. They can't get anything close to the value that they paid. That's Mourinho. And this is going to be a nasty divorce. I can't wait. You see all these players sending Pochettino messages on Twitter and Instagram. Gaffer, thank you so much for the development. We've been not only coach-player relationship, we've been friends, father, son. I really appreciate all you've done for me. Good luck in your next stop. You will see none of that in 2 or 3 years when Mourinho leaves your club. A burning pile of 35-year-old has-beens who can't play any longer. Jose is a snake oil salesman providing one-way tickets to hell. And for all of you Jose Mourinho stans, shut the fuck up. You'll do nothing. Point to his trophy case all you want. Yes, he was a great manager. 10 years ago, you idiots. He plays boring football and claims all the accolades for doing it with quote-unquote less talent. F off, man. F off, you checkbook manager. You has been. You VCR. You 8-track tape. You bicycle. You know what all those things have in common with Jose Mourinho? At one point, they were the bee's knees, baby. That was cutting-edge technology. They were must-have. This was the top of the top. That's exactly what Jose Mourinho is. He's a dinosaur. You know what he is? He's a hand job. You know what's better than a hand job? Everything else, man. A blowy. Sex. I can keep going, but you get the point, all right? Hand jobs are cool in middle school, but this is the adult world. So no, I won't be jerking off to Jose Mourinho's trophy case. No, no, no. I want to know what he's done for me lately and what he's doing now. The internet, man, everyone loves and hates everything on the internet. Christ, Spurs, you reap what you sow. And poor Pochettino. Or is it poor Pochettino? Let's talk about him for a second. Poch out has been said several times throughout this year by Spurs fans. This season, lest we forget, it's not been a great year. Right now they sit in 14th, but they're 3 points away from fifth. So don't tell me they're in 14th. Yes, they've thrown away easy points. No, they don't look motivated any longer. But who takes the blame here? Sure, Pochettino has to take some of the blame. It's his team he puts out. It's his job to motivate these players. But what about the board and Daniel Levy as well? Too tight with the cash to secure new contracts for Christian Eriksen and Toby Alderweireld. Too tight with the cash to bring in new players, multiple transfer windows in a row, to make these talented players want to stay. Too tight with the cash to keep your brilliant manager happy when he says he needs this and that. Pochettino isn't without blame. He was at Spurs for 5 years and won as many trophies as I did sitting on my couch. Champions League finalist medals are cool and all, very cute, but you don't hang them from the banners. They have a $1 billion stadium to pay off, and the only way to do that is to win. So what do? You sell your soul to the devil, hoping to chase that tiger tail. Jose Mourinho will fail. Pochettino will get a great job. And ultimately, you know what will change at Spurs? Nothing. Not a damn thing. They've never won anything in my lifetime, and they surely won't move, you know, going forward. So there you go. Enjoy that, Spurs fans. And to be fair, I've seen a lot of you scratching your head because it's instinctual to back the manager. He is the guy now. He's getting paid a ton of money, reportedly. 15 million pounds a year. But you know, just as well as I do, what I just said for the last few minutes is 100% fact, and it's scary. It's scary looking this man in the face, knowing you are days away from a matchup with West Ham, and you have absolutely no idea what you'll get. You don't know what he's going to say. You don't know the style of football he's going to play. That's your team now. That is your future. That's your preview. That's what you'll get. Enjoy Mourinho picking his favorite players. Does Wanyama come back into the team? Eric Dyer back in favor? Will he have time for Eric Lamella? Is Harry Kane okay getting one chance a game? This could get bad, man, like real bad. Or I could be wrong, but that doesn't happen too often. Woo! How about that, boys? And the best part, now we all get to sit back and enjoy. It's good to have Jose back in the EPL. And by the way, I'll take the under on that West Ham-Tottenham game on Saturday morning. You know Jose wants to get a result. Speaking of EPL action, it's not all the Jose show. We do have a 6-game slate coming up that we'll run through in just a few minutes. But before we do that, let's talk about FIFA, man. Not the video game, which I love and play weekend league every single weekend. I'm talking about the corrupt governing body of our favorite summer events like the European Championships and the World Cup. The latter is where I'd like to focus, the World Cup. So for those who don't know, every 4 years, you have to be awarded the privilege of hosting the World Cup. It's a voting process. It's a democratic voting process, supposedly. Qatar was awarded the 2022 World Cup, once again, in what was supposed to be a fair democratic voting process. Among the competitors bidding for the glorious event was the United States of America, made by Vegas, and anyone with a brain, the heavy betting favorite to be selected to host the event. Much to everyone's surprise, Sepp Blatter, the head of FIFA, opens the envelope and without blinking, turns it around to show the name Qatar. To me, in what could possibly be a bigger upset than Tyson losing to Buster Douglas or Leicester winning the premiership, Qatar winning the World Cup should elicit some reaction, unless you know what the answer is going to be, right? I'm not bitter that I lost $500 betting on the U.S. to win this. I mean, that was a stone-cold lock, easy money. I was already spent the winnings, but that's besides the point. Everyone was stunned. What just happened? How did Qatar win the freaking World Cup? Isn't Qatar in, like, the Middle East? Don't they have less people in, like, Atlanta, Georgia? Yes. Yes to all those questions. Qatar is all those things. They're also the country with the highest per capita income in the world. 2.6 million people. And that, my friends, is exactly how they were awarded the World Cup, with bribes and money laundering and backroom deals that led to a number of arrests, minimal jail time, but some removal of the head of the snake that is FIFA, Sepp Blatter, only to be replaced by a new crooked geezer, Baldy. And all of this was exposed not too long after they awarded the World Cup. So surely it was taken away, right? Okay, so let's move on to our next set of questions. Well, then how the hell are they going to play games? It's like 140 degrees in the summertime. They don't even have any stadiums. No worries, baby. Oil money. Got that sweet, sweet oil. And cheap labor to build brand new stadiums with air conditioning. Yep. At one point, that was a plan. We'll play in the stadiums, but we'll have air conditioning. We're not worried about what people do once they leave the stadiums or the fact that you can't drink in public or, you know, you can't be gay or, you know, anything that every other country in the world allows. And by the way, don't mention the human rights atrocities. We're not even going to talk about that, right? Stadiums with air conditioning, baby. That's our plan. There was, of course, that issue with the cheap labor I mentioned, right? Well, in 2013, November, Amnesty International reported serious exploitation, including false statements being signed by workers that they had received their wages just to secure passports. They had labor camps, modern-day slavery, an untold number of deaths from these slaves being forced to work night and day to build these new stadiums for this corrupt World Cup. Not just stadiums, too. They had to build freaking roads, highways, public transportation, hotels. They didn't have anything remotely close to being able to host a World Cup. So surely, common sense will prevail, right? Nope. Press forward. Okay, so if bribery, just trying to wrap my head around this. So bribery, money laundering, and backroom deals, that wasn't enough for FIFA to move the tournament. Okay, and modern day slavery, untold deaths from migrant workers who, you know, died trying to make pennies a day to feed their families back in India and other surrounding countries. Nope. That won't move the tournament in FIFA's eyes. So is there anything that would force FIFA to take a second look at this? Well, how about those air conditioners, right? How about those air conditioners in the stadium? How about the conditions for the fan? It's literally boiling there in the summertime. What now? Let's move it to the winter. Ha ha! It's colder there in the winter. Let's move it to the winter, says FIFA. But wait a minute. That's when all of our favorite football teams play their leagues. Well, according to FIFA, that's not their problem. I'm sure the leagues will figure it out. So it's now been confirmed, as it has been for a little bit, that FIFA will have Qatar, the murdering, bribing, throwing gay people off roofs because they're rumored to be gay. Qatar is going to host a Winter World Cup for the first time ever. Awesome. Awesome, right? Yes. What about this makes any sense? And I put it out on Twitter. This is actually a good thing. And on the surface, you could be like, well, how is this possibly a good thing? It's in Qatar. It's disruptive to league play. We'll now be forced to take a break during the sham of a World Cup. They're going to start early. They'll play late. It's hard on the players who already have played an ungodly amount of games during the season. Oh, yeah. And also be the shortest World Cup since 1978. Just announced this week, being played in less than a month from November 21st to December 18th. So, how is this a good thing, Duke? I think everything listed above means it's time to say goodbye to FIFA. What is the point of FIFA? Why do we need FIFA? Why does college football and basketball need the NCAA? What are these governing bodies anyway? What is their purpose? Well, like the NCAA, FIFA is basically like a party planner, right? They negotiate. They go find the cake at the store. They hire the clowns to come entertain. They set up the house. They do all the background stuff so that the event is fun. They negotiate the TV contracts. They negotiate the sponsorships. They pay out the money to the countries who really rely heavily on FIFA's money to keep their operations going. Where's FIFA get their money? From these TV contracts, from these sponsorships. But like the NCAA now, do colleges really need the NCAA to host March Madness, to host the college football playoff? Couldn't these major colleges just break off and do their own thing, negotiate their own TV contracts, negotiate their own sponsorships? Absolutely. And we see the NCAA caving everywhere, holding on to the last little thread of power in their corrupt game. So why do we need FIFA? Why can't England and Spain and Germany and Brazil and the United States and everyone say enough is enough? We aren't agreeing to this anymore. move the tournament out of Qatar to a different host country and play it in the summer, or we aren't going. Band together. Agree to it. If they say no, screw them. Create your own tournament. Host it in England. Host it in Spain. Host it in the United States. These countries could host a tournament this summer, let alone 2 to 3 years from now. So screw them. Get rid of FIFA. This is a sham. It's paper mache. It's fake. It's monopoly money. But here's the issue. It's not just FIFA. Who do you think they've been paying off or getting payments from? It's the heads of these countries that are at fault too. So this, for me, has to start with the players and the fans. And I ask you this question. Would you watch a Winter World Cup without the best players in the world? Think about it really hard. Would you? Let's say the United States somehow qualifies for the World Cup, right? Even though we missed it last time and look like trash now. Let's say we didn't take our best player. Let's say Pulisic wasn't there. McKinney didn't go. Josh Sargent didn't go. What if our best players weren't there and instead were filled with also-rans, fill-ins? Would you watch? What if Harry Kane didn't play for England? Raheem Sterling? Trent Alexander-Arnold? What if the top players from their team didn't play? Would you watch? Because if it meant leaving FIFA, I wouldn't. And that's the God's honest truth. Change needs to happen, and needs to happen today. The closer we get to 2022, the more likely this thing is going to happen, and it's going to run into the domestic season. It's going to ruin the players' careers. It's going to set up a dangerous precedent. I can just see it now. We get to 2022. Season starts early. Woohoo! We're happy. We get football sooner than we thought. Think about what we're coming into now as we head into Thanksgiving in America and Christmas throughout the world. This is congested fixture season. These players are playing way too many games as it is. Now in the middle of this congested fixtures schedule, we're going to put a freaking World Cup. It's going to be a mess. Players are going to get hurt. Your favorite players are going to get hurt. These clubs paying their players millions of dollars are going to have them leave in the middle of the season and play in this tournament and get hurt. I go back to it again. In America, can you imagine if right now we stopped the NFL season and all these players from all these different teams, and granted, they're mostly American, went off to their states even. What if we did a domestic World Cup? They went off, all the players from Ohio are playing the players from Florida. What if we had that tournament? This actually sounds like a pretty good idea. Write that down. Right in the middle of the season. You think the Patriots would be okay with Tom Brady leaving his team and playing in this tournament? You think Matt Ryan could just leave the Falcons? You think Lamar Jackson can head out, leave Rams camp? Come on, man. Come on. Let alone the human atrocities, let alone the bribery, let alone the backhanded deals. How is this tournament happening? This is the perfect time to break off from this sham of an organization that is FIFA. Tell those people to all go get their first real job of their lives and take over everything ourselves. Let's do it. Come on, come together. And if I'm an idiot, you disagree with everything I'm saying, let me know. Hit me up on Twitter at Duke DFS. You can also find me on Twitch at Duke DFS there as well. We don't do much betting as of yet, but we do talk through some DFS stuff as you play some video games and hang out for a bit. But that's probably enough ranting for today, right? I don't even know how long it's been, but probably too long. Let's talk a little DFS soccer and this weekend's action. As I mentioned, we do have a 6-game slate this weekend. And shout out to the boys over at elitefantasy.com. We did do some articles for those Euro qualifier games. I know we had some guys absolutely smash on a few of those slates. Kind of wonky slates, smaller slates, but absolute smash city over there. Fun time in the chat room, as always. But to the desert, Bournemouth hosting Wolves. Bournemouth plus 175. Wolves slight road favorite there. 2.5 total. Even money on the over, minus 120 on the under. Arsenal minus 205, hosting Southampton, who've been bad. I mean, like real bad. Plus 475 on the road. 3 total there, minus 120 on the over. Even money on the under. Brighton plus 270, home dog to Leicester, who could be without James Maddison, who are plus 180, plus 105 there on the road. 2.5 total, minus 115 on the over, minus 105 on the under. Crystal Palace hosting Liverpool, who could be without Mo Salah and Andy Robertson. Crystal Palace plus 650. Liverpool minus 245. Second biggest favorite on the slate, only to Everton. Totals there, 3, plus 110 on the over, minus 130 on the under, likely due to Salah being absent there. Everton, like I mentioned, biggest favorite on the slate. Why? Because they're playing Norwich, who are bottom of the table and trash. Everton minus 250, Norwich plus 650. 3 total there, minus 105 on the over, minus 115 on the under. Last but not least, Watford, a home favorite against Burnley, plus 125 to Burnley's plus 230. 2.5 total there, and unsurprisingly, minus 125 juice on the under. So let's go game by game there and just talk briefly about these games. As I mentioned, a couple big injuries to talk about. Arsenal, Southampton, relatively healthy. James Maddison, late fitness test with his calf injury. Johnny Evans should be back for Leicester. Huge news that Mo Salah and Andy Robertson are out. Actually, in that game, don't hate a couple of the replacement options. They obviously could go with Origi, who's likely to be the starter, but they also have Adam Lallana there, who's been getting more game time. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain has been absolutely on fire for club and country, so he might even be an option in that forward position. Either way, we have to grab some Liverpool shares. But Bournemouth Wolves, what the heck do we even know about this game? Well, I've said it year in, year out, game in, game out, week in, week out. If you can find me the Bournemouth Whisperer, I will pay them an ungodly amount of money, because the only thing consistent about them is how inconsistent they are. Josh King also looks likely to miss this game with a thigh injury. Ryan Fraser's going to be a late test. So, oh my God, Bournemouth, who knows? Now, the reverse, Wolves, they've been quite good lately. Shaky start, right? Shaky start. First win came September 28th this season. Haven't lost since September 14th, though. And that's kind of the key. This is a typical Wolves season. If you remember last year, Burnley got off to a really slow start thanks to Europa League and those tough Thursday nights. Wolves, I think, shaky start as well with some of their commitments. Kind of settled in on a new team. Adam Traore playing in this advanced position has certainly helped them with some dynamism in the final third. Jimenez coming around. Jota finally getting on the score sheet. So things are looking up for Wolves. But in this game, I'll break it down even further in my article on Thursday over at elitefantasy.com. But on the surface, how can you look at this game and pick a winner? From a talent standpoint, if I had an in-form Callum Wilson, I could say it's quite even. Maybe Bournemouth even has a slight edge with him being the home team. But Callum Wilson isn't in form. Josh King could miss. Who's going to score the goal? Can Harry Wilson continue to score banger after banger? And if Ryan Fraser misses, who's coming off the other side of the field? So I'd lean Wolves in this game, but a draw wouldn't surprise me. How about Arsenal-Southampton? I mentioned both these teams quite healthy. Dani Ceballos may miss a little bit, but Arsenal, you got to be licking your chops, right? Arsenal sitting in sixth right now, which is great. But again, we mentioned how tight fifth through basically 16th really is. Sheffield United sitting fifth on 17 points and West Ham in 16th on 13, just 4 points separating, what, 10 slots in the table? Pretty wild, but we are early in the season here. But this is such a weird year for this table, quite honestly. But Southampton stink. And their last seven games, they've gotten picked up 1 point. 1 point from 21. That's relegation. That's manager fired, like literally within a couple games. If he doesn't pick up a point here, he's got maybe one or two more games, then they need to make a change quick. January transfer window will be here before we know it. Need to get a new manager in place to assess the talent, figure out what he can do with them and what holes he needs to fill in January, or Southampton will be playing in the championship next year. Currently sitting in 19th place on 8 points. If Arsenal can get Lacazette and Aubameyang firing and Pepe figuring out the league, finally play him a little bit. I mean, this is a team whose captain has not only been dropped from the team, but might be sold in January. They're no bag of goods right now themselves. So interesting game that I surely see Arsenal winning. It could be kind of a bounce back game for them. But let's move forward to Brighton Hove Albion hosting Leicester City. For me, the linchpin here is James Maddison. With or without him, Leicester should win this game, but with him, it's a no-brainer. And these odds make absolutely no sense. For me, Leicester being plus 105 is strictly due to Madison's health. Jamie Vardy's firing off cylinders. Yuri Tielemans continues to be a revelation. Obviously, James Maddison is crushing it. Harvey Barnes looked like he's coming into his own off the left. Damari Gray's coming in and having an impact. Brendan Rodgers has done a fantastic job with this Leicester team, and they rightly sit second in the table right now on 26 points with a plus 21 goal differential. And that's the thing. They're keeping clean sheets as well. Unbelievable team right now. Brighton playing some beautiful football, but they don't have the talent to hang with a full-strength Leicester squad. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens with team news come 9 a.m. on Saturday morning. Just a few games left in the 10 a.m. slate, and we'll get you out of here. Crystal Palace hosting Liverpool. The huge news is what happens with Mo Salah and Andy Robertson. I think they'll be fine, guys. I think they'll be fine because Crystal Palace are kind of just like a shining turd, sort of, right? You remember in Joe Dirt when he's got the meteorite and it turns out it was just dumped out of an airplane from their toilets? That's kind of what Crystal Palace have been. A shooting star at the start of the season, top four even for a couple weeks, getting results ever since, nada. They can't score. They're conceding like crazy. Zaha's like 50-50 to play, even though I think he's really 75-25 to play. The good news for them, Christian Benteke did bag a couple goals on international duty with Belgium this week. Granted, it was against a couple farmers, but hey, the ball found him and it found the back of the net. That helps confidence. But for me, Liverpool may be closer than the experts think, but certainly a Liverpool win. Two games left, Everton hosting Norwich. We talked about the dumpster fire that is Norwich before. I'm not sure what they're going to do with their manager because I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I don't have it in front of me, but I think Norwich just won the championship last year, led the league in points. They're likely to go down regardless of who manages the team. So do you just stick with what you got and say, let's ride this out. Let's make our money from this year, head back down to the championship, maybe reinvest and try to get back the following year. Or do you sack the manager now and make a last ditch effort at trying to make up the gap? I mean, they are, 4 points out of relegation at the moment. It's not like they're totally done. But from an offensive and defensive perspective, just the team flow, their organization, I cannot see a way for them to get out of this relegation zone. The teams in front of them, which is everyone, just have more talent. They have more attacking ability. There's even like a Southampton, even a Watford who's getting Troy Deeney back. I could see potentially putting some things together for the remaining 28 games to get themselves out of relegation. I just can't see it from Norwich right now. Pukki's got to get himself going. He's got to get in the good areas, but he needs service as well, and they're just not getting it to him. This new defensive shape does not suit their personnel. As for Everton, they're starting to get their act together a little bit, but they are by no means out of the woods. But they got their forward scoring some goals. Richarlison scored. Calvert-Lewin scored. Cenk Tosun came off the bench and scored a goal. So if they can keep those guys firing and get Moise Kean used to the EPL and the physical nature and get him on the field, could be some dynamism in that attacking third. Don't hate Everton in that game. Last but not least, this is a slobber knocker, man. Watford, Burnley. This will be both teams looking at each other going, no, you attack. No, you attack. You go. Oh, like I said, no surprise on the under 2.5 juice there of minus 125. Burnley, interestingly enough, yet to win a game away from home. So my inclination here was to say, who's going to score for Watford? Well, Dale Lefebvre has been the man, but a couple of his goals have been from the penalty spot. And if Troy Deeney's back, that's his job. If Dale Lefebvre is the one getting fouled, that's great from a DFS perspective. Is that really going to help us? Or do we go with Troy Deeney? Interesting dynamic now in their final third. Be interesting to see how that plays out. But from a strictly organization point of view, I could easily see a draw or even a Burnley win in this game, quite frankly. Watford, not necessarily a force going forward, but as a plus 125 favorite at home, Vegas seems to like them a little bit more than I do. How about a 1-1 draw? You know, last week, I guess 2 weeks ago now, I was all over Ashley. Didn't trust my gut. He goes out, scores a goal. But that man, Chris Wood, man. Chris Wood just cannot stop scoring goals. No JBG.